Welcome to the GoTo Podcast. Each episode covers the brightest and boldest ideas from the world's leading experts in software development. Tune in for practical lessons, compelling theories, and plenty of inspiration. GoTo gathers the brightest minds in the software community to help developers tackle projects today, plan for tomorrow, and create a better future. Stay up to date with the latest in tech through GoTo's top-rated events held online and in person in cities like Amsterdam, London, Copenhagen, and Chicago, and by subscribing to the GoTo Conferences YouTube channel, where you can find thousands more high-quality dev talks. Learn more at gotopia.tech.
Hey, my name is Sebastian. I'm one of the speakers here at GoTo Copenhagen. I'm also the founder of HeyHack, and I'm sitting here at GoTo Unscripted together with...
I'm Scott Helm. I'm the founder of Security Headers and Report URI, and I'm also doing a talk here on similar topics to you, I believe.
Yes, exactly.
So you already had yours today, did you just say? I've only just arrived, unfortunately, due to travel problems, so I actually missed that. What was the topic?
So we spoke of a very large study that we've done on web applications out there. We've been scanning around 4 million services and checking for all kinds of things, everything from security headers or missing security headers. Yeah. Sort of a basic thing, but a very important thing. We've also looked into known vulnerabilities, so known CVEs on servers that are sitting out there. We have a service ourselves where we can go ahead and do sort of the extra step and do more of a pen test, but we've obviously not done that without the consent of these 4 million sites. So we've kind of been scratching the surface a little bit, but that's really been enough to sort of build out this report or sort of like say something about the state of web app security out there. And many of the things that both you and I have talked about for many years are still very much relevant out there. And I think it's about time that many organizations take this a little more seriously and maybe invest a little more into AppSec.
It's definitely a common trend, isn't it? I think just going, you know, to what you said there about how it kind of feels like we're still talking a little bit about the basics, but then at the same time, it's like, well, I'm still talking about them because they feel really relevant.
Yes.
And, you know, sometimes we look at areas of the web where we've made really good progress.
Yeah.
And, you know, HTTPS obviously being like the poster child for what we can do when we put an industry to work on a thing. But yeah, I think a lot of people, you know, especially like with me founding security headers, it's, you know, it's like if you do a security header scanner, you've got all of the security headers and you get an A+. It's like, it doesn't mean you're not going to get hacked. You know, it's just, it's a really good indicator, I find, for other things as well.
Yeah.
And a lot of the time, these things are, like, most security headers are on-off configurations, essentially, aren't they? And, you know, it's just a good indication to the security posture of the organization. Yes. It's like, well, have they got the basics in place? And if they don't, can we then allude to other things that they may not have in place as well?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think they're important. You know, they're not... If you deploy all security headers, you can't say, we are not going to be hacked now, you know? Yeah. It's not that kind of security.
Yeah.
But I definitely think they're great starting blocks. And if you're running a web app, you know, for the basic levels of protection that you can get for some really simple things, I don't think you can beat that anywhere else.
No, exactly. And I think especially, speaking about security headers, I think one of my sort of like the... A thing that I keep talking about all the time is content security policy. And it's just, I think we're on the same page there, right? So it's just a shame that it's not being deployed more often. Not that it's a catch-all thing that's just going to save you from all kinds of types of issues, but it's a good type of insurance. Like if you do introduce something that you're not well aware of at the time, it might catch you, right? Like particularly cross-site scripting and many other things.
Yeah.
What do you see like based on the results from security headers with respect to CSP specifically? Or?
It's one of those things that's been a slow burner for a very long time. You know, we are starting to see like the continuation of just the very steady trend.
Yeah.
And, you know, I have another project of mine called crawler.ninja, and that's actually the domain.
Yes.
And I scan the top 1 million websites every day. Uh-huh. And one of the things that I look at is, do they deploy a valid content security policy?
Yes.
And I can go back every single day for around about 6 or 7 years now.
Cool.
And we see this like very gradual trend. And it's only the top 1 million sites, but arguably they're the 1 million that are most likely to have a CSP because they're the biggest. So we look at that and think, well, you know, we've got like this very steady rise and I'm still waiting for the hockey stick like we had with HTTPS.
Yes.
I'm hoping like there's some new PCI regulations. Mm-hmm. So if you're an e-commerce site, the new PCI regulations come into effect in 2025.
Yeah.
And they will require a content security policy on payment pages where users put card data.
There you go.
Because they keep ending up with JavaScript, like you said, some dependency that we didn't want or we didn't know about.
Yes.
And content security policy is the number one thing to help you with that.
And so now you're saying most security headers are like an on or an off kind of thing, but I think CSP might be the exception to that.
Correct.
Right? Yeah, you need to do a lot of configuration and keep it up to date and like...
Yep.
What's a good practice, do you think, for working with a good CSP and keeping it relevant?
So I should probably preface that with I'm hugely biased because that's what my company does. Yeah. So, full transparency to everyone out there. But the biggest thing that you kind of hinted at there's like two components that we break it down into. Number one, building the CSP.
Yes.
Because it requires you to write a list of all of your external dependencies.
Yeah.
And most people can't even begin to write that list.
There you go.
So we built a thing called the CSP Wizard, which will create the basic policy for you and say, well, here are all of your external dependencies. And then you just need to tell us, oh, well, we expected to have all of those, but I don't know what this one is. So, throw this one away.
Yeah.
And then the ongoing maintenance as well, because of course, sites are quite dynamic these days. They change a lot. So you have to keep the policy up to date with what you have. And the thing everyone's worried about doing is breaking their site.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if your content security policy doesn't allow JavaScript to load and that JavaScript is essential, that functionality will break. And this is a really big thing that we come across with all of our customers.
Yes.
And you don't have to run the content security policy in enforce mode to get the value. There is a content security policy report only mode, which is like a safe test mode. So if you deploy a policy in that mode, and then it starts sending reports like, hey, you've just got this new JavaScript dependency. You're still getting that feedback.
Yes, exactly.
And you're getting it instantly.
Yeah.
And you can take action immediately. Yeah. Whereas when most sites get hit with cross-site scripting or, you know, like a supply chain attack, they don't realize until weeks or months later.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, well, you know, yes, you're going to have a cyber attack for those, you know, 12 minutes.
Yes, exactly.
But it's better than 12 weeks, right?
Exactly.
And that's what usually happens in these cases.
Definitely.
So yeah, I think you're absolutely right. CSP is pretty much the only one that's not an on-off setting because it's about the content security policy is about writing what should be on my site and therefore everything else should not be on my site.
Yeah,
and of
definitely.
Course, that is unique. Per site.
Yes, exactly. Another pragmatic way of doing it, that's how I do it at least myself, is to put a very restrictive CSP up on first, try to run your site in localhost on your own developer PC and see what breaks, right?
Yep.
And Chrome is also going to help you quite a lot just by looking at the dev tool saying which.
Like,
yes, exactly. And it's can kind of work the same way, right? The issue we find sometimes is if you depend on some third-party services. So, for example, in our own product, we've got HubSpot Chat. Unfortunately, HubSpot don't think about the security the same way I think you and I do, right? So they'll invite you just to put in this script tag there. Of course, no dependency integrity tag either on that. They kind of want to be able to live update whatever they put on your site. And not only that, they also like to change the host names of wherever they put their scripts. So it's very hard to like keep that running in production. Even if you've set it the right way and it worked whenever you developed it, it might break along sort of along the way.
Your third-party dependencies can be dynamic as well.
Yeah, exactly. And what was a good sort of what's a good way of going about that? What do you have any suggestions in that regard?
Yeah, so there's a couple there actually. So the both of these are in my talk tomorrow actually because they are the biggest problems that people come across, and obviously those are the problems that we should talk about. Mm-hmm. So the first one that you mentioned, SRI, sub resource integrity, for people listening. If you don't have that on your script tags, you absolutely should. Like apart from the fact when you download essentially dynamic JavaScript from someone like HubSpot. One of the examples that I give is like the stripe.js file, or if you have other payment processors, they require you to load this JavaScript file and it changes every single day.
Yes.
And then it's very difficult to pin that down and say, what should it do when what it does changes every day? So now we have a feature in content security policy where you can basically say, look, I want to load my dependency from, you know, stripe.js or HubSpot.js, whichever. And then I trust this dependency, so I'll allow it to do whatever it wants to do.
Yes.
So it kind of gives you the strength to lock it down and say, I only trust, you know, HubSpot or Stripe.
Yes.
But I trust them to do what they need to do.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, you know, the only real scenario you need to worry about is like, oh, well, what if Stripe gets hacked? Or what if HubSpot? And I'm like, well, if that happens, we're all doomed.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
You know, I was like, so I'm kind of okay with this. It's a reasonable approach. It fixes the problem that you just mentioned, which is one that people come across all the time.
Yes, exactly.
You know, I have a dependency that loads dependencies. Yeah. How on earth do we deal with this?
Yes, exactly.
And that's called strict dynamic in CSP. So you can say, look, I trust this dependency. Let it go do its thing. And apart from this dependency, I also have these other three.
Yes.
And that's it.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good
so
way.
So it can be done. It's just, again, like you said, CSP is one of those features where it just requires that little bit of configuration because it's unique per application. You know?
Yeah. And switching maybe over to sort of another topic, but still sort of along the same lines here. Quite often when we engage with new organizations, we do these pre-scans of their infrastructure. So we try to map out all of the different services that they expose. And quite often when you speak with an organization, they'll have a lot of attention directed towards sort of their main applications, right? Through their main customer portal or whatever that might be, right?
Yeah.
But very often we find issues in these legacy applications that still tend to be out there, right?
Shadow IT, as
yes,
we call it.
All of that stuff, right? And if you haven't set HTTP only for your cookies and host only for your cookies, there might be sort of a risk of leaking these cookies across your domains.
Yeah.
So even a very old application that might even be up for decommissioning, it's not getting a lot of attention in the organization any longer, could still sort of take down all of the rest of the stuff.
Yeah.
What are some good ways of sort of managing that, or maybe first of all becoming aware of that and then and trying to contain sort of the risk associated with those applications?
So that I kind of picked up like two distinct angles there, I guess. Yeah. One is the kind of shadow IT thing that where, you know, there's an application that's working and no one's looked at it or touched it or patched it for however many years. But then I was kind of also getting a hint of the other, which is like the internal external perimeter.
Mm-hmm.
And we seem to have like very, very different security equations on each side of that perimeter.
Yeah.
And that's something that, because I used to be a penetration tester, if we go back quite a few years, that was, you know, that was my first foray into the security industry. And it's a really common thing to be like, oh, well, this is an internal application.
Yes.
We don't therefore need any of these security things because we have this impenetrable firewall on the outside.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've even seen scenarios where missing like some of the security controls that you mentioned there, mm-hmm. people forget that you can hop that perimeter quite easily with things like cross-site request forgery.
Yes.
You know, so if you've got a person inside the perimeter that visits a website on the outside,
mm-hmm.
you know, some innocent, innocuous site, and then they start running JavaScript, that JavaScript can communicate with those applications internally, right?
Yes.
You just send requests to internal IPs, spam them all in a loop, and, you know, off we go. So, yeah, I think we need to kind of break down this idea of the internal versus external, you know, thing,
definitely.
Especially as like a security boundary.
Yeah.
And we see that with HTTPS as well still. Yeah. Oh, it's an internal application. It doesn't need HTTPS. I'm the network is the network as far as my view goes. If it's going across the network, it's going across the network.
Yeah, definitely.
It doesn't matter if it's inside or outside. And then, yeah, in terms of the kind of like shadow IT / legacy, you know, thing, one of the organizations that I work with at the minute, they're focusing on like, how do we actually map our infrastructure?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like we can't fix the things that we have if we don't know the things that we have.
Exactly.
So doing that kind of inventory or, you know, that audit of all of your exposure is actually really one of the first things.
Yes.
So I do a lot of work with a DAS scanning company as well, who we recently partnered with on security headers. And one of the best things in their scanner is its capability to crawl. And, you know, whenever we look at it in comparison with other DAS scanners, it's like, okay, well, like the most important thing is coverage because, you know, there's no point finding 100% of vulnerabilities on 40% of the application.
That's it,
You know, so it's really kind of like the first and foremost thing is you've got to try and push coverage to 100%.
Yes.
And, you know, that's why I think that's such an important angle because you've got to know what you have if you're ever going to secure it.
Yes, exactly. I think we're kind of working with a mantra that you can't test what you can't see. So if you're not going to find the functionality in the first place.
Absolutely.
I think, unfortunately, there are a few legacy providers in the industry that speak very much about sort of the very vast this very vast test suite that they're running, but might not be up for the task of crawling modern web applications that are very JavaScript or client-side heavy.
Yep.
And so they might not be able to find all of the interesting bits of the application where it's probably
you think
needed
about
to run
all of like the authentication flows, business logic, you know, payment flows, and there's so many different things in any kind of modern app nowadays.
Yes, and exactly.
I find as well with a lot of the legacy kind of approaches, they're they're testing for vulnerabilities in technologies that the application doesn't even show signs that it uses.
Yes,
and it's exactly. Like, oh, well, our scan's going to take 4 days. And I'm like, well, yeah, but you can dump 3 days because we don't use any of that stuff. So yeah. We need to be a lot smarter about these things.
I mean, there's not much sort of, there's not a big point in testing for backups of htaccess files if you're not running an Apache server in the first place, right?
It's like, oh, we're currently on the SQL injection part. Great, we use Mongo. Like,
exactly. There you go.
Why are we here?
Yeah, exactly. That's totally true. Speaking a little bit about sort of these sort of shadow IT or things that are running out there that you might not be familiar, be sort of be aware of, we just recently spoke with a large organization that had this funny little application that somebody built. It kind of like smelled a little bit like an application that had been built by a developer on a Friday afternoon, sort of as a tool to help their colleagues, right? Mm-hmm. And so it was a password generator. Basically, this little app that could generate a secure password, sort of, I guess it's an alternative to a password manager that might have this built in. So you could just use this. And it was a publicly exposed web app on the subdomain on their main website. Now, unfortunately, this developer probably had the intention of helping their colleagues be more secure by helping them create secure passwords. But it turned out that it was vulnerable to cross-site scripting in itself.
Oh.
Yes. And they weren't very strict about using some of the good flags that you can set on cookies elsewhere. So they had lots of leaks across their domains. And you could really just start, like, lots of the ingredients for a good attack were definitely present there. And I think I'm just mentioning that case because we're seeing many of those types of applications out there that nobody pays attention to because it's not a critical application.
Yep.
Well, it's on a critical domain and you haven't really gotten all of your other stuff in order, right?
And they start out with the best of intentions, don't they?
Yeah.
Like you said at the beginning, somebody thought, oh, I'll just, you know, I'll quickly put this together. It'll be really helpful. But then it's like, okay, but now we have more stuff.
Yes, exactly.
And I come across so many things like that where they start with the best of intentions and then they've got no, you know, budget oversight management and they just kind of like sit there and work.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's quite funny.
I think sometimes in security, unfortunately, there's a little bit this idea where you have so many problems, you know, related to security, you've got 100 problems. You try to develop a solution for it, but before you know it, you've got 101 problems, right? So you kind of have to stay on top of what you're doing with respect to that.
I'm trying to remember the old saying for that one. It's like standards are like toothbrushes.
Yes.
It's like everybody wants to use one, but nobody wants to use somebody else's. we could probably make like most of the tooling that we have do most of the things that we need, but we always need more tooling.
Yeah, I think
we always need more applications.
In the talk that I gave, I had another case that was very similar to this example that I just gave. It's a public case that Checkpoint Technologies, they had some researchers there that found an issue at Epic Games, so the producer of Fortnite. Same thing again, they had this old site for Unreal Tournament 2004 and some stats site where you could
good game.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And so I think they had a competition or some sort of a tournament at some point where you could see all of their stats and you can just tell from the web design that it had been sitting there for a long time, right? And turns out it's vulnerable to cross-site scripting. They had an issue in their OAuth flow that let anybody basically redirect back to any other domain on epicgames.com.
Ooh.
So they could trick somebody into logging into their account and then redirect back to this old application. It's a public study, and I guess Epic Games has been okay with like revealing revealing that. It's on Checkpoint's blog if anybody wants to check it out. But again, it's kind of to the same point that it's quite often these things that you're not aware of that will, you know, make you fall. Not always your main app that gets a lot of attention, right?
I think it kind of potentially goes a little bit towards the kind of defense in depth strategy as well. You know, it's like we still come across this like really super traditional view and like part of the internal external perimeter is part of that kind of, you know, that really traditional view where, you know, like there's one way to solve a problem.
Yeah.
And it's actually like, well, you know, this, you know, we can break this down. There can be multiple smaller mechanisms that actually, you know, combined provide a larger benefit overall than just viewing this as like, you know, we need to solve this one problem. Yeah. And I think that's why, you know, people like in the course that I'm doing this week, so I'm doing Troy Hunt's Hack Yourself First workshop on Thursday and Friday, and we still do a little bit on SQL injection.
Yeah.
And people are like, well, it's, you know, like, you know, have we not solved this now? Yeah. And I'm like, well, actually, no.
Well, there was a little bit of, there was a little application called Move It that turned out to be vulnerable to a SQL injection.
I wonder if anyone's heard of that one.
Yeah.
And it's like, I think a lot of it comes from, to kind of like bring it back to the point, is people will look at that piece of vulnerable code and, and be like, right, this is the vulnerability. We've now fixed the vulnerability.
Yeah.
Because we patched that line of code. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, right, but we need to go more holistic.
Yes.
You know, we need to kind of take a step back and think, okay, actually, rather than just keep patching these vulnerabilities when they pop up, is there a way that we can step back and think, actually, you know, is there something that we could fundamentally change at a slightly higher level that would blanket all of these issues?
Yeah.
And yeah, it's, again, it goes back to that really traditional way. Oh, this is the vulnerability. We'll patch this.
Yes, exactly.
Fixed.
Yeah.
You know, tick on the compliance box or something like that.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that would be another good thing, is to start looking at solving security at a way more kind of broad spectrum scale.
Yeah, definitely. And speaking a little bit about SQL injection, so there are many web application firewalls out there that will tell you, just by the sort of a whip of a magic wand, they'll fix all of your SQL injection issues.
I have such like a fundamental problem with Bash being the answer to everything.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not to say that they, you know, they serve a fantastic purpose and we should have them and we should use them. But I think everybody misses the part where they're like a temporary solution to the problem.
Yes, exactly.
And then we go fix the actual problem.
Yeah.
And that second bit is usually the bit that I find that doesn't happen.
Yeah, exactly. We just did a lit test of a large web application firewall out there. And my personal experience is that they have a tendency to reject a lot of genuine users, so they can generate a very bad use experience, especially if you put them in a strict mode and a prevention mode.
Yeah.
But they might miss the actual attacks, right? So we had one case of one specific web application firewall out there where, just by making any query that would include the words union and select, it's going to just reject it as an SQL injection attack, right? So we had set up this little demo on the OWASP View Shop, this, I guess, the industry standard web app for testing these kinds of things. If you don't know it, it's basically, I guess, the world's most vulnerable application, I guess you could say.
Yeah. Yep.
And so we'd made a test where we would, you know, do some tests against it without a WAF in front, and one where we would put a WAF in front. And we just tried making a request to their search endpoint, typing in this bogus query saying, hey, Joe Biden has just given the State of the Union and the American people have chosen to select him as president. And just that little weird phrase was, you know,
marked as trigger.
Yes, exactly. But on the other side, and this is a thing that most of these web application firewalls, they suffer from, you can try to insert some different characters that are not going to affect the actual SQL query that you want to execute, but it's going to break the rule engine. So you can try and play it around with it yourself, but many of them cannot handle null bytes for some reason. So if you put in null bytes into the middle of your SQL injection attack, the WAF is not going to protect you and you can still execute that query. So
we have a similar kind of part of one of the modules in the workshop again, where we do filter evasion.
Yeah.
And like cross-site scripting filters are another, alongside SQL injection, they're another really common one. And like we do, you know, the idea that you can write, and I guess this is the overall point of the module, but the idea that you can write some filter that will catch all of the bad things.
Yeah.
Implies that you know all of the bad things that exist, you know?
Exactly.
And I'm like, well, you know, can we sit here and say, I definitely know about every single thing that could go wrong and I'm going to write a list of them and then stop them?
Yes.
I was like, you know, I think just on that explanation alone, we can agree, you can never write a filter that will catch everything.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, by that very definition straight away, filters are a kind of, I find them a lot of the time, a false sense of security because people are like, oh, we have, you know, a cross-site scripting filter in the WAF, like, so now we don't need to worry about it. And it's like, have the filter in the WAF, try and have it as your first point of contact, but still make sure that you're properly escaping outputs, you've got a content security policy, you know, like, this is the defense in-depth strategy, right?
Yeah.
It's like, we've now got three things, and they're all relatively easy to do.
Yes.
You know, it's like most frameworks will take care of the encoding part for you now, and content security policy requires a little bit of like work, but really not a lot.
Yeah.
And sticking a WAF up is like clicky clicky buttons now, isn't it?
Exactly. I feel like a lot of people have a lot of hope or expectation in a WAF, or that the WAF is just going to do all of it for you. But if you sort of compare it to sort of network firewalls, I mean, not a lot of people would expect that you can just buy a firewall from Cisco to protect your network and not configure it, and it will still fix everything for you, right? Like, I know many people whose full-time job it is to just configure Cisco firewalls and the network.
Well, they're just like an unknown kind of like dark art or something, aren't they? Yeah. I'm sure they have like special sorcerers in Harry Potter that would qualify for configuration of, especially, you know, kind of hardware firewalls like that.
Yeah, but I guess the point is just like, okay, I mean, configuring a firewall is a full-time job, whether it's a network firewall or a web application firewall, essentially, right? Yeah.
But people overlook that a lot, you know? Like, it's just the complexity in any given role. I think we've got a lot of, I've actually been writing a blog about it. We've had a couple of issues on Report Your Eye recently, like a technical problems. And it's like, oh, you know, I really need someone that's good at like building a DBA, basically, was where it was going. I was like, I really need someone that's good at like knowing how to structure the data and build the queries. And I'm like, that's a person, that's a job.
Yeah.
You know, like that's a whole art in and of itself.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's the same with so many different security roles as well. Yeah. You know, there's a lot to it, a lot more than people usually realize.
Yeah. So, Scott, we're talking about all the problems in application security here, and I guess lots of the viewers here could be a little depressed about how hard it might be to actually fix these things. But what could you do? What would be a good way of setting up an application security strategy?
Yeah. Wow. I think you've got to have direction from above, like developer level, first of all. You know, I think whilst we can definitely promote it and drive it from you know, kind of like developer technical staff level, if it hasn't got the support or the initial direction at least coming down from the top, you know, like we're done.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, like my side of things comes more from like the technical testing and the fixes and the implementations. In terms of driving a strategy internally, you've got to have people invested, you know, and this is coming from my kind of slightly uninformed view, I guess, on this, but you've got to have people invested. You know, you've got to have people understand that security is everyone's responsibility now. Yeah, you know, I think we have, again, this very traditional view where we have an organization of 1,000 people and there's a security team of 5 people. And it's like, well, that doesn't really work anymore.
Yeah.
You know, we need to take that focused security knowledge and just like sprinkle it across the whole organization.
Yes.
Because I think everybody having a very small amount is better than everybody having nothing and 5 people being like responsible for security.
Yes, definitely.
So, yeah, I think, you know, that kind of baseline knowledge across organizations. Mm-hmm. We've got to understand like nothing is ever the user's fault.
Yeah.
I've been in an organization so much where users are kind of just blamed. Yeah. It's like, oh, they clicked a link in the email and our infrastructure blew up. And I'm like, well, your infrastructure is really the problem in that. Like, if I can click a link in an email and blow up your infrastructure, I don't think the user was the problem there.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, it just requires a bit of a change in mindset from a lot of the traditional views on how we do security, I think.
Yeah, and I totally agree with you on that. And then I think people have to understand that it's luckily not so hard to fix many of the massive issues that exist in web app security. Like setting these security headers for all of your services might seem like a daunting task, but if you actually look into what it requires for many organizations, it could be done within a day or two. I mean, it's not a lot of effort, but the outcome or the protection you'll get is high, right? You get a lot out of it. What we find quite often is to have somebody own it in the organization, and that would typically be the security division, right? Having a CISO or a director of security or whatever, but still get the developers on board, because quite often developers have to sort of implement things, whether it's a content security policy or, you know, correctly sanitizing some input or escaping HTML characters for cross-site scripting, whatever it might be. But if you understand the underlying problem and the Open Web Application Security Project, or I guess it's called the Open Worldwide Application Security Project.
Yeah, I think
now
it changed, didn't it? No one saw.
Yeah, exactly. Kind of just switched out the W there, but they have a super good resource, and maybe just for somebody to, or for the viewers at home to have a look at the cheat sheet series that showed at the OWASP is super good. And they've got basically coverage of all types of issues you could imagine in a web app. And then I guess training, I'm super happy that you're giving this training here at GoTo now.
Should be good.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to it. Thursday, Friday, isn't it, for the trainings?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I can't think, I've definitely not done GoTo Copenhagen before. I think I did a previous, I go to like lots of different events, so it's hard to go back. Especially everything before COVID, it's just like, I forgot all that now.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, I think I did a GoTo somewhere else as well.
Yeah,
I can't remember which one it was specifically, but. Yeah. Are you workshopping this week? Are you training?
No, not this week, unfortunately. But I'd be happy to sort of take a sneak peek at your chance at content.
Do it, then. Yeah, definitely. Feel free to come jump in.
Yeah.
The beginning of day one is like a little bit of setup and introductory kind of stuff and getting some tooling ready. But yeah, by like the morning coffee break, we're hacking stuff.
Yeah, very cool. It's very hands-on, I guess, then.
Yeah, it's really, it's like at least a third of the time, I would say, is, you know, I demo basically an attack. I explained what happened. So I'll do some SQL injection, dump some data out, explain what happened. And then literally the first step is, right, go reproduce this.
Yeah,
go and do it yourself. Dump the data out of the database. You know, then people figure out they can change other people's usernames. Then we usually have a little bit of fun. And then, it's like, right, let's go look at, you know, what happened. How did this happen? And then the end of every module is the resolution.
Yeah, of course.
So,
and so if you missed this this week's training here, is there any other way you can jump in this training or access it in some way? Or
So on my website, I always have an upcoming events section down the side. And it's got things like the registration link for here. I've got another one. So I do a lot of private ones with companies and their own staff, but public ones, there's one coming up at the beginning of January in Norway, and one in January in London as well. And they're both public for anyone. You know, if you've got like one person, then I keep doing those because they're accessible. You know, if you've got three developers, you can't have a full training course of three people. It doesn't work. So I like to keep the public ones on offer as well.
Yeah, very good.
And very yourself, are you?
We're mostly doing training whenever we engage with organizations. So we try to bundle things together in sort of one package. We have an automatic web application scanning solution as well. And as I said before, I care very much about coverage like you do as well. So we try to like make that sort of the baseline of things where we cover as much as we can. And then we train developers and organizations to understand the outputs of these scans. I mean, many tools have the tendency of just producing a long list of issues that nobody really understands. And it becomes kind of this thing that you don't dare touch. And alert fatigue is a big thing in our industry as well.
False positives are so bad for just the overall improvement of security.
Exactly.
You know, false like once you give somebody like three false positives, they're just ignoring you from now on. And you've blown it.
So if you, from sort of the automatic side of things, can reduce the number of false positives and you can upskill developers to understand the output a little better, it might not seem as scary. You know, fixing a cross-site scripting issue, even though it's got sort of this high severity mark on it and everything is red, you know, you can fix it within 5 minutes if you know what to do, right? So like combining sort of an automatic solution with, just as you said before, sort of a baseline level of knowledge and security seems to be the perfect recipe for getting started with this.
And it's interesting to see that we're obviously both independent and we've, you know, like naturally just come to that conclusion. And there's other people that I observe in the industry as well that have really similar approaches. And it's really easy. Like when you're doing it, you just look at the results, right? And then over time it's like, oh, well, that one didn't work so much and this approach was better. And and we all kind of like end up naturally following the same path. And it's just based on the results, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's super cool. Well, thanks a lot for the chat, Scott.
No worries, thank you as well.
And good luck with the training this week.
Yes, and I hope you have a good conference.
Yeah, you too.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the GoTo Podcast. Head over to gotopia.tech to discover lots more content from the brightest minds in software development.